Wessex Press, an imprint of Gazagine Books, is the premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. They are also our publishers for The One Fixed Point in a Changing Age, A New Generation on Sherlock Holmes. It was edited by several of the Baker Street Babes and contains a foreword by Laurie R. King, the author of the Mary Russell series. Another brilliant book published with Gazagine Books is Matthias Boström and Matt Laffey's Sherlock Holmes and Conan Doyle in the Newspapers. If you'd like to know more about Wessex Press, Gazagine Books, or our publication, please go to www.wessexpress.com.
The Baker Street Journal is a leading Sherlockian publication written by the readers for the readers. It contains both academic articles and light, fun reading for any sort of Sherlock Holmes enthusiast. If you are a fan of The Great Detective and the other works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and you'd like to read new and exciting writings by Sherlockians, or even find information on how to get published in the journal, please visit their website, www.bakerstreetjournal.com.
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland, they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two-to-one be mine?
Welcome to Baker Street Babes, episode 77, where we react to the six Thatchers.
And boy, and how are we reacting?
Yes. This is Amy, and I'm joined by Ashley and Lindsay. And we will try to react to a very complicated episode with a lot in it and with some mixed feelings, definitely.
I want to point out that Norbury is all the most beautiful canonical moment.
That was
and
the best
it's so sweet. Is it? Yeah, totally. And it's like so, it's so sweet and so lovely that like, Sherlock Holmes is like, listen, every time I fuck up, you have to tell me because I'm so arrogant that I don't know. And you have to just explain it to me. And Watson's like, okay, sure. And Holmes is like, just whisper Norbury in my ear. And
as soon as she said her name was Norbury, did you go, well, shit's about to get real.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. Like I rolled over in like a Mobius strip position, and I was like,
"Your inside, like, your inside was your outside. Your canon was your Sherlock." No,
I want to give a shout out to Ashley and I were talking about this a minute ago, but to a major fan theory that that because Mary herself was identified with Agra, that she would actually drown, much like the treasure does in the Sign of Four, and we can get into how the many ways that this episode kind of messed around in the Sign of Four a bit, but we did have her meeting her fate in an aquarium, which I thought was actually, as soon as I saw the promos had an aquarium in them, I thought, okay, I see where this is going. Basically, you could watch, you could stop tab and start this. We have Sherlock Holmes is still obviously under the influence. We have this kind of inquiry happening, and Mycroft has basically edited the footage of what happened to Magnuson at the end of his last vow, and Sherlock is now free. Right. That was, I would say, pretty much played for laughs, although I will say Sherlock has a conversation with the person whose codename is Love in this scene. And I did go, he's paying special attention to this woman. I wonder if something about that is going to mean something later.
That's definitely fair, because it was, you know, sort of highlighted.
We have like Lady Smallwood in this scene, who obviously, she's awesome, but she was a big part of his last vow and had her face licked by Lars Mikkelsen. We kind of have
Which
this.
Is not what you want from your day.
No. So she's pretty happy. No one in this room seems particularly sad that Magnuson is deceased. Sherlock seems a little hacked off that Mycroft has covered it up, which is kind of an interesting aspect of their dynamic.
I'm very worried about him.
Yes.
I'm very worried about him.
He is not really in a great place. So he says, basically...
I have so many brother feelings, too, though.
Oh, boy. Mark was... I mean, we've already said it, and we'll say it more, but the performances are without reproach.
So good.
So good. Amanda Abington just gets a million kudos, and Mark, who gave himself again some really great lines, as Michael.
Well, yes, he did. But he still pulled them off. So if you give yourself great lines and you don't pull them off, then that's terrible. But if you give yourself great lines and you do pull them off, then you were right.
So we basically have this strategy of Holmes deciding that he knows Moriarty's, well, posthumously up to something, and he's just going to go about his normal sleuthing activities.
But in this episode, right, there isn't actually any evidence whatsoever that Moriarty is up to anything posthumously.
No,
that
no
could,
there's
that
no,
could all
there's,
be part
there,
of the real segment.
There's nothing. There's nothing. It is so hard to actually write clues, and there are no clues in this episode, and it makes me fear. It makes me crazy. Like,
yeah,
it's so hard to write clues. They didn't.
They had a lot of time to think up some
to write
fucking clues.
They had a lot of time.
They
to
had
think
a lot
about
of time
clues.
To think
okay.
about clues.
There are no fucking clues in this episode, and like I am very angry about it, and I am also okay about it.
Well,
like,
he did get a very. I don't know if you were able to watch this part, Lindsay, because I know you had tech issues, but he does do. Some
I had tech issues just at the beginning.
He does some awesome. I mean, there are no clues to the overarching thing necessarily, but there are some awesome mini deductions at the beginning. Like he deduces this guy's tattoo of his like Japanese
okay,
girlfriend.
No,
yeah, well, there was some
which is hilarious.
Head.
There's
that
like
is,
many
that is,
deductive
that is
scenes.
Poached from the canon, so
right, right.
So that was.
And he even had the great
the
Jabez Wilson line about no, I see
yes,
not
exactly,
much to it.
Yes,
nothing
yes, exactly.
to it at all.
That's Jabez Wilson. Yeah. So
yes.
Like you didn't write that; you just poached it.
I mean, I'm almost wondering.
Just write clues.
I'm wondering though: are we setting up for like what
I'm sorry,
if? We were set up for some kind of 7% solution thing where his obsession, I mean, we had a little shade of that when basically it gets real as soon as he breaks the bust and I'm going out of sequence, but we see the Agra thing and we realize that his obsession has already not led him in the correct direction. And that gave me kind of feelings about the 7% solution. If people are familiar with that, where he's way off track with tracking Moriarty, who's not actually who Holmes thinks he is, and it has a lot to do with drug use, which we're seeing, so I'm curious.
But Culverton Smith, literally in the canon, Culverton Smith tried to kill him with poison.
Yes.
So he could be trying to poison him in a different way.
I mean, the overemphasis on Moriarty is part of Sherlockian lore, because Moriarty himself in the canon doesn't really turn up that much, and Moriarty has had so much made of
Moriarty
him over and
shows
over and
up
over.
Exactly twice.
Right. So the idea that he's this kind of he's an arch nemesis that is constantly locked in mortal combat it's kind of a joke at this point. Where they're
yes,
like,
it's a trope.
Holmes has now locked on. He's existing inside the trope. And on the
right.
outside, Moriarty isn't actually there.
Right.
So I
which
mean,
is an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun, but also kind of annoying.
Well,
no,
like,
it's an extraneous villain that, you know, like only exists as far as Holmes describes him. That's it.
And that gets kind of difficult to when you're. I think. You have, like, when you're leading up to that, like, in season one, when we're leading up to that and we're all, they're, like, teasing us along, that works in one way, but I think it's a lot harder to make it work the other direction. Like, after we've actually had a Moriarty arc, to have it teased back after that,
it's harder. It doesn't work the other way.
Yeah. I think, we did have a callback to the It's Never Twins line, which I'm interested by. I'm still kind of hoping for some kind of Janine and Mari, like, I don't know, whatever. There's last names. Y'all can all look that up, whatever. Last name connection between her and somebody and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so sequentially, he's solving, we have this montage of, like, another set of cases with pun kind of canon names. One is called the Canary Trainer, which is obviously
a Nicholas Meyer shout-out.
Nicholas Meyer, yep. And
we also got the Engineer's Thumb, but it was the wrong thumb.
Yes.
It was the wrong thumb.
I enjoyed that.
I loved that. It was the wrong thumb, though.
I know.
Which is also
a throwback to my favorite Eunice Stubbs line.
Oh,
thumbs. That's it. That's my favorite line in the entirety of Sherlock. Nothing will ever top it. That's the best moment.
Yes. Ooh, oh, she was
thumbs.
Great.
That's it.
She didn't have a huge amount to do there in this episode, but she rocked the moments she was around. We also have a new character, since we know from Stephen and Mark's Q&A last week that Vinette Robinson was not able to open her schedule, she's a very strong presence and we do miss her, but we still have, of course, Louise Freely as Molly, who I think we'll see more of, and we have a new character who is kind of mixed up with our Silver Fox, G. Lestrade, who still is getting more names.
George.
Jeff, with a G-E-O.
So we basically, at the same time that we have a fairly straightforward case for a short time here alongside the Watson family growing.
You are so good.
Thanks. So we also have this dog, which I'm assuming they actually wrote into the script that the dog doesn't want to do anything, because apparently that was like a huge issue in filming that everyone talked about.
The dog did nothing? The dog did nothing during filming?
In the nighttime.
Right. So we have the introduction of, obviously, there's a dog in the canon, so we finally have the dog. So Lestrade brings this weird case. Basically, this guy's son has died in this car, and we see it's Charles Edwards, who's an awesome English actor, plays that character, bereaved dad, and... Yeah, so that's
and
how we
get the... And my sympathy for him is limited because he has a shrine to Margaret Thatcher in his living room. So
he does have a shrine.
I don't feel that badly for him, actually. That's a little unfortunate. I would like to feel badly for him, but I don't.
That is totally fair.
So we get basically the first intro. That case is honest. I think we can agree it's basically a vehicle for us to get introduced to the idea of these busts of Margaret Thatcher that are being smashed.
Sure. Which is kind of unfortunate, because I think it could have been a little bit more interesting. I think they could have played up that mystery a little bit more.
It could also have been a little bit more, like, they could have bothered to have clues.
Right. He just solved it without having any idea.
And it's, like, so annoying, because I...
Work really hard to come up with clues.
I work really hard to make clues, and... It's very annoying when people don't. But yeah, it's still a beautiful show, and it doesn't matter. It just
can I interject and say that my thought as I was watching the final scene was, I hate to say that Sherlock has jumped the shark, but there were actual sharks.
Literal sharks.
They're actually sharks. They had a shark in the opening shot, and I'm like, well, I think they're just going to go ahead and call it. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the Samara story?
Yes. Yeah, because it's just dumb.
It just sort of is tacked on. And at the beginning, I genuinely thought that, like, I was listening to it, and I was going, wow, well, this is a non sequitur. Then as it was going on, I was like, it
doesn't make any sense.
Well, I thought, here's what they're going to do. This is a story about death and omens and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be hilarious because it's going to be Sherlock reading a bedtime story to the Watson baby. But it wasn't that.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't that. And also, Watson doesn't have a kid in the canon. So it's like, you don't know where it's going. It's just weird.
I mean, they had to do it. I get it. So now it's going to be
Sherlock. They didn't have to No, they didn't have to do it. They just did decide to do it.
Right. I mean, once they decided to make her pregnant, they had to do something that wasn't going to be like, oh.
Exactly.
And Mary lost the baby off screen.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's making me feel, like, long and pine for the whole, oh yeah, my wife died, which takes, like, one paragraph or less in the story. But anyway, okay.
Right. Nobody needs to do that. Like, don't take us to that place.
Right. So we, yeah.
But they're going to.
It's, yeah.
And,
And we kind of all, I think, saw that probably coming. So, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So we have some nice, like, again, we have a juxtaposition of some very jarring, like, non sequiturs with some great character work and actor moments, which I think is kind of the story of this episode.
I think the highlights of this episode all are in the moments that the actors find, because I don't think that the joy of this episode is in the plot, and I don't think that the joy of this episode is in, I don't even think it's
there
in what it reveals about the characters.
Plot.
There isn't
there
a plot.
There is not a plot.
It's like, it's like the Great Train Mystery, where there couldn't have been another stop, but oh, there was a secret stop.
Right.
Like, it's that. That's the level of narrative I feel that we had
so
here.
So ridiculous. There's no plot.
The acting is beautiful. But the acting is beautiful. And I can't fault anybody who stepped in front of the camera.
Right. Because basically we get completely straightforward from that point. We get the birth of the baby, and then we get this assassin. We find out that the busts are not their own thing, which of course we kind of knew.
Right.
Sherlock is expecting this solution to this, like, Borgia's pearl mystery.
Which is the solution to it in the canon story.
Right.
And actually, there was a moment there where initially I was like, oh, they're doing the thing that they did in Study in Pink, where they've, like, thrown in the thing, but it's not actually the thing. And then, like, they carried it on so long, I was like, I bet they make it actually the thing. And then they didn't make it the thing. So
I had the same thought.
I enjoyed
that. That was fun for a couple of seconds.
For a couple of seconds.
For a couple of seconds.
It was kind of a...
Amy, like, that's exactly what it is. It's fun for exactly 2 seconds. And then it's not fun.
So we have this guy. He's
and
coming.
You're like,
So
and then you're making like spam noises.
Yeah. So it shakes down to basically a straightforward thing where guy comes after Mary. Sherlock says, "I'll protect you." Mary goes on this. This was my low point, y'all. The Mary going on this cross world.
Right. What was she doing? She was just rolling the dice and walking randomly.
What is this about? Mary is so cool in the canon, right?
And she's so cool in most of Sherlock too.
Right.
And
like
then,
don't
and then she
don't
goes
just
on
make
a
her don't just make her a plot device. She's so cool. Like you can't.
What was that just wandering around? Like what was the
accomplishment? She had to, I guess, wander around. And,
I
like,
mean, I guess it was the idea of.
I guess you have to do shit, wander about.
Well,
like,
and at the
go from place to place, and you have to be like, hey, I made a journey. I went from this place to this place.
Yeah, I mean,
and it totally makes sense.
I mean, it accomplished. Yeah, I mean, it accomplished.
Basically
nothing.
And
wore several funny hats and some different hair, so you know that happened.
But she didn't actually do anything, and it was so frustrating.
Yeah,
because it was like
it was like a several
you
minute
had
setup.
Every
it was a several minute setup for a punchline that was Sherlock is there waiting for her, and. In service to the fans, and I'm not one to complain about how infrequently the show is made.
Yeah.
However, you only produce 3 90-minute episodes every 2.5 years. The least you can do is not waste 5 minutes on one bad joke. Like, what are you doing with your life?
Yes. Thank you.
Look at your life.
Thank
look
you.
At your choices.
Look at your life. Look at your choices.
Yes. Bitch.
We also, should we talk about what we have happening with John Watson on public transportation?
Yes, can we talk about that? Because why?
Yes, we can definitely talk
That's so not Watson.
What the fuck?
That's not Watson at all. That's not his character.
I agree.
That's not canon Watson. That's not... That's not Watson.
It doesn't make sense.
Unless and that I was
think...
wife number six.
Also, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really sorry that we're yelling at you.
Sorry about that.
It's all good.
I don't mind Watson enjoying a flirt on the bus. Because that's totally
I mind Watson not caring about Sherlock Holmes.
I mind that Watson texting in the middle of the night.
The minute bed. John Watson doesn't behave like a gentleman, whatever. You can do whatever you want with the show.
You remember sharks?
I think I understand. I feel like what they were going for was the kind of thing, it's like this flirtation happening. I'm not saying I support it. I didn't like it myself, but... I think they were going for this thing, supposedly this wouldn't be that big of a deal, and then you lose someone, and all of a sudden the guilt that you have over this fairly minor thing
because life wasn't already hard enough huge thing. If you're John Watson.
Right.
You didn't have, PTSD, and then come back, and then your friend pretended to die but didn't die, and then you find out that your wife was actually a super spy, and now she's dead. It couldn't have been bad enough, now sense. You also have to have guilt about a couple of text messages and
it doesn't make sense.
No, I don't think I was surprised by it, and I don't think that it fits what we've seen of his character previously in the show, let alone canon.
They don't care though. I don't think they care.
This whole episode felt like they wanted to tell a story.
Okay, but
the problem is
that's
they wanted
fine.
To tell a James Bond story, and they only had Sherlock Holmes to do it.
That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, they themselves used the James Bond name, so I think, lots of reviews have used it. And I think, again, we have through till the very end, obviously, I mean, it's pretty straightforward up to that. We have the big thing of Mary finally meeting her demise, taking a bullet for Sherlock, which...
That didn't make any sense either.
No, it didn't.
No.
That doesn't make
sense. I mean, the idea being that Sherlock
goads...
The idea being that Sherlock goads someone into rage and whatever. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Okay, so because of the fact that people would definitely sacrifice themselves for people that they love, but it was not set up that way.
No, I don't think so.
It was never set up that way.
Mm-mm, I don't think so either.
It's just weird.
It didn't feel... It felt a little disjointed, and it felt like a lot of the characters didn't have the proper motivations behind
that.
Their
I was going to say,
why did Mary take off? That's not her action.
No,
because she's a go-getter kind of person. So she's just going to absent herself and wander aimlessly around the Asia. That doesn't make sense.
It does not.
Watson is all of a sudden going to flirt with a woman on a bus because his baby cries too much. That doesn't make sense.
I already said we're going to take this show, we're going to take it to 11, and then we're going to take it to, extra 11, and it is never going to work.
Then you're
going
to go, my God, we're already 11. What do we do? Sharks!
We're at 11!
Sharks
Holy
with
shit.
Laser beams!
Already at 11! What the fuck are we gonna do? Make Mary, I don't know, save Sherlock! Amazing!
Can she die? Yeah, that'll be awesome!
Then she can die! Right?
Perfect! What can we do to make it more awesome? Sharks!
I wish that the people inevitably listening to this could see you guys.
Sharks!
Sharks!
Do it!
Do some
Put
sharks!
The sharks!
Put the sharks in! Put the sharks in!
Yeah.
Put the
I think.
Make
I
it
think
a cranky I'm, secretary!
I
Go!
Feel, I feel like if this story had been over the three whole episodes, it might still not have been enough. episodes to tell. Like, I feel like there is a version of this story that could have been more interesting than what, or more, or less disjointed.
I feel like there's a version of this story that would have been really good, and it's the one that was never, that never happened.
It was a piece of shit.
I felt a little guilty having these feelings.
It was terrible. It was terrible the entire time. I'm just telling you.
Yes, it was terrible. It was, and I love this show, and I love all the people.
I love this show,
and I do think that they're brilliant. I really, really do. But this episode was so ungood. Double plus ungood.
I agree with what you guys said about the motivations, because I feel like I feel like the motivations are. I feel like
it's really bad. Dude.
It did not lead me to have the emotional reaction. Basically, this is the bottom line to me. It did not lead me to have the emotional reaction that I wanted to be having by the end of that. Well, I did not have the full emotional experience I would have wanted to have.
But also,
it's so bad. Here's what I texted to Lindsay and Tim when it was done. I said, here's the thing. I mean, it made me cry. But it may have made me cry because it had so many layers of self-retrospection that I'm possibly actually inside an onion.
Right.
Yes.
That's how I feel. And that may have been why I was crying. I might have been crying because Mary died and Watson made wounded animal noises, maybe. But I may have been crying because I did not know what was going on at all, and I'm not a stupid lady. I'm not a dumb person, and I had no fucking clue what was going on. The end.
Amy. Mm-hmm. It's also really, 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 like, so bad.
Okay. So, I guess
listeners,
we kind of
I'm
agree.
So sorry,
it was,
and we love you, and if
very,
you love Sherlock, then,
no.
You know.
I did not love the plot of this episode. I think...
It is Blind Banker levels of...
Yeah,
ridiculous.
Cool. Basically,
why is Amy so much nicer than we are. She's such a better person than us.
This episode is really terrible.
Why are we dealing with international incidents and spy rings and things and what? Why can't we just have, you know, a mystery?
One of the reasons that the episode is great is that it is still about. Sherlock Holmes and John Watson being best friends.
Yeah, that's true.
And you can't ever take that away from anyone. They are always best friends. So that is one of the reasons that...
I enjoy that. Except it didn't end that way. It ends with Watson wanting nothing to do with Sherlock, so...
Yes, I know, and that's wrong. But they're going to fix it. In the next episode, they're going
to
fix it.
But how can you fix that? I mean, here, what they've done to the Watson character is that he now has to, every time he looks at his best friend, see the man who could have taken the bullet that killed his wife. And now he has
you
to...
You don't...
Every second, hang on. Every second he sees Sherlock, he has the internal battle. Which would I rather have taken that bullet?
You don't ever have to actually go through that. You only have to know that Watson in the canon are best friends and they love each other. And you don't have to do anything other than that.
But they didn't. Now they've put them in a different place than they were in the canon.
Yes, yes. But it doesn't matter because Sir Arthur Conan Doyle already did it.
Yeah, I mean that. I like that.
So,
I think
like,
we have the
you
canon
don't
as
have,
our Bible.
You don't have to worry about it.
This is not the first.
I'm super worried about it, but like I'm just saying that you don't have to be worried about it because
I want to say something way out of left field here, which is I don't know if you guys watch the show Luther. With Idris Elba. That is a show that this was reminding me of intensely, and people may get teed off of me for saying this, but I love Luther as a show. I think it is beautifully produced. It has excellent production values, and it has excellent acting. But it frequently, in my personal opinion, suffers from this issue of having just the most inane plotting where things are overly complicated, and sometimes you get lost. You have this kind of character who's a sort of Mary slash Moriarty kind of person, who's his kind of person who's in love with him, but also kind of his arch nemesis, and she's kind of this international person who can, you know, escape the insane asylum and run around all over the world, and it's a very, there's a very similar feeling to it, and I think it's the kind of thing where they usually get by with it because people like the acting and they like the production, but when you start to really parse down to the details, you're like, what in the world was the plot of this? And I feel like that's a constant issue. Yeah. And I think with Sherlock, we've had, especially early on, we had several episodes that were so tight. Yeah. Like thinking back to A Study in Pink and the amazing deductive trails, thinking back to like even the Reichenbach Fall, where we had something that was emotional, but where the emotion came from an extremely like...
understandable place.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think it's, like, the fault of any one particular thing. I'm not a hater of anything in particular. I don't think it's like, ooh, this writer did a bad thing, or, ooh, I hate this character and this character poisoned the show, or anything like that. I really don't think it's anything like that. I just think that it's become... it's too internal for me. It's to the point where... You can't step out of it and enjoy external mysteries. Yeah. You know, the kind of twin layers going on where there's always the mystery and then there's the characters and they intertwine at various points, but there's always the core of the mystery adventure going on, and I feel that they've sacrificed that part of it to tell a story about the characters that actually I'm not really that interested in.
Right.
I'm interested
I'm
interested in how the characters operate with reference to the situations that they're placed in. And as soon as the mysteries start being about the characters, that was the point in the show where I was like, I wish they wouldn't do that. As soon as it was, we're going to make a mystery about Sherlock.
But they're always about him.
No, but I mean, they're always about them engaging with the mysteries and exploring their characters.
Right, but they're about them... they're about them solving it together.
I know, but now it's not about a thing to solve. These are actually just them. Like, there's no underlying... You see what I mean? Like, that's...
Yep.
What's missing is the context in which they should be placed. They're lacking their context. They're lacking the Sherlock Holmes adventure.
So they don't have the space in which they are free to run around and be them.
Right.
Right. And because this is particularly a problem because we've already removed them from their original context and put them in a modern context. And I'm seeing a lot of responses like on Twitter and stuff. I mean, pretty much universal acclaim for the acting and everything like that.
Sure.
But also a lot of people going, what about this is Sherlock? What is keeping us anchored to what is
attached to the original stories?
Right.
What about this is canonical? And it doesn't have to be. And nobody is saying it has to be. But, like, what about it is?
Right. It doesn't... I mean, I'm not a fidelity person. I don't really care if it's canonical. But the thing that makes Sherlock Holmes for me is not the time. It's not the place. It's not the actors, it's not the gender, it's not the race, it's not any of those things, but it
oh
is,
god, like, Joan Watson, Joan Watson recently on Elementary has been, like, just nailing it.
She's
like
awesome.
Crazy.
But there's a context of adventure in which these characters learn about each other and themselves within this other milieu, and they've extracted the milieu and just left the characters to try to learn about themselves, and they just keep turning more and more inward,
that's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
You pull out the gun, and you save your best friend, and that's how it works.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people would agree that the ending of Study in Pink, which is obviously that exactly, is one of the most perfect things that's ever happened, and we're kind of in a very different place from that. I do want to ask, since we're kind of talking about it more generally, what do we think about the reference to put Sharonford on the phone?
I have no data for that right now. I cannot make bricks without clay. And they didn't give us any clues.
Seriously, it's just fan fodder. Mm. And it's like, you know, dangling in front of people that there is a different Holmes brother, and that's fine. But
it's fine, you again, can, but without context, it's not, it's also not.
You can, yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't make any sense without mm-hmm. context.
Right, we need, so, like,
just yeah. put some context in it, yeah. and then
Watson didn't know how much he cared about Sherlock, and Sherlock didn't know how much Watson cared about him, and how important these adventures were, until Sherlock was about to take the pill. And then Watson knew that he had to pull the trigger. But it was the moment that they were in that made that happen. They don't just sit around and pontificate about it, you know? It's just, they don't create the situations yeah. themselves, you know? Like, oh, I'm gonna piss off this woman so much that she's gonna shoot you, and then you're gonna, or shoot me, and then you're gonna step in front of the bullet. Ha ha, well, he caused the problem himself, so that doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's like, at some point, if your stuff is on a certain level. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, it has to be organic or it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Right, because the canon creates curiosity about their domestic life by giving you very, like, minor slices of that sprinkled through mysteries.
Yes.
But it's through the mystery context that we learn about who these people are. And I think it seems like we all share sort of an agreement that what were, other than maybe issues, just actual plotting issues with it being disjointed and stuff, it seems like we're all sort of concerned about this meta trend where you're creating your own problems for your own self to solve, which at some point it's like, why, what, number one, what makes this organically Holmesian, and what do I care enough to make it worth me watching?
Right. At some point, just stop causing problems for yourself, and then you no longer need a job. Like, you know, when he is the problem, when they are the problem. It works once. It works for, you know, it worked for Reichenbach Fall, because it was organic there. But
mm-hmm.
if you do it episode after episode, where he's just making himself the problem in order to solve himself, then all we do is have one big masturbatory fantasy in a mind palace. And, you know, I'm waiting for the episode where all of a sudden we realize that none of this has actually happened. And actually, it's all been a fantasy that Watson concocted, and he's still talking to his therapist at the very beginning of the first episode. Like, that's the world I feel like we're living in.
Oh, something to comment on. We had Sherlock Holmes visiting Watson's therapist at the end of this. Mm-hmm. That might just be me. I mean, maybe that is a callback. Obviously, in 7% Solution, he consults with Sigmund Freud. I don't particularly care for that in that book either. So just a personal thing. I don't see Sherlock Holmes doing that, but that could just be me. That's a personal opinion.
There are all kinds of things that we could talk about regarding Nicholas Meyer, but I actually do like that book.
Yeah, I like the book. I don't particularly like Freud's psychoanalysis of him at
the
end.
Well, no. Like, it feels like there was
an aim to get him in that chair, to have that mirroring moment. And again, it didn't feel organic. It felt like we have to create something so catastrophic that Sherlock mm-hmm. is going to need that therapy. And so they constructed it around that. And it really feels forced to me.
Well, and we had Sherlock in this episode being more of the feeler, as contrasted with Mycroft, who, you know, we have him showing the baby picture. We have several instances of supposedly Sherlock, you know, being the more sensitive, and I don't know. I like him the way he is originally. I like him all the time. I don't necessarily need him to be.
There's nothing wrong with Mycroft.
I don't need Mycroft or Sherlock to become, like, deeply different individuals. That doesn't mean we don't have character growth and friendship like we saw in something like The Sign of Three, but I don't need him to, you know, shift character massively personally.
Right. I agree with that. So
no, there's no reason you would have to.
What other aspects of the actual story? Because we've gone off on a long tangent, just sort of talking about kind of the abstract construction of the show, which is what we're complaining about in the first place, so let's not do it on our podcast. What about the actual episode? What other aspects of that were interesting or not interesting? I mean, I thought that the death scene was apart from it not making sense on a motivational level for the characters, I did think the acting was really good. I mean, you felt...
Amanda Abington is...
amazing. Like, she was wonderful.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And so was Martin Freeman. I think he was also wonderful. I think he, you know...
Right, but you know that's going to happen. And so one of the other things that, like, kind of confuses me is that you know Mary Morrison dies.
You don't know how it's going to happen.
Right. Oh, okay, so you don't know how, but it was amazing, and it was great and fantastic, and I think that she was awesome, but you know that's going to happen.
Did we know she was going to die in the first episode of this series? I don't follow any spoilers or anything, so I don't...
Like,
No, not in the first episode, okay. No. But, like...
It aided them.
But, like, it's Mary Morrison. She dies. Like, you know that she does.
And they were aided by, as far as like spoilers and everything, they were aided by the fact that she takes on so many disguises, because they were able to, even Setlock made it look like she was in more episodes because of her different outfits and disguises. Sure. So most people, I think, were not sure. I think most people probably expected it in episode 3, maybe, but I mean, there were a lot of different fan theories. I'll tell you one thing that I really liked, at least thus far, is that she's not Moriarty. It doesn't turn out that she's the real Moriarty, or that
she's... thank goodness for that.
You know, or Moran.
Or Moran. She's not... Her story is not the story of, you know, the final problem in the empty house. It's it's the sign of four more than anything. I mean, dragged through several different episodes.
Yeah.
That is one thing that I thank them very much for, because a lot of people... had said that and maybe wanted that. I felt like that would be a bridge. If you feel like this jumped the shark, that would be like jumping 10 sharks for me. Like I can't deal with you know, John Watson having to deal with
so
that
many
on top
sharks.
To me, that's a big plus. I liked that it was a self-contained, to some extent, story of her, so that was at least a positive for me. I don't know. I'm kind of with Lindsay on the why did we introduce a child just to have this happen?
I don't know.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Apparently now it's you know, Molly just lives there and hangs out with the child, so she doesn't have a job anymore. That's cool.
No, that's not cool. There's nothing about that that's cool.
That was sarcasm.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I'm sorry. But, like, why? Like, this is stupid. This is, like... Okay. You can do this gross thing where they just accidentally have a child and it's accidentally here and Molly accidentally loves Sherlock. So Molly accidentally is going to just, you know, hang out there. But don't do that. Not the way life works.
What I really hope is that the second episode is not just grubby Watson who doesn't shave, also not taking care of his baby, like other people are there taking care of the baby for him because he can't function, and Sherlock desperately trying to get in the house. Like... And like, there's a clue, here's a case, are you interested, ta-da, no, okay, here's another clue and a case, no, I'm not interested. Do you want to blog? No, I don't want to blog. And at the end of the episode, he blogs, and it's all fine. I really don't want an episode, now that we've had a whole self-wank episode about how to get rid of this character that we've created and we know must die. Now
exactly.
We have to have a whole episode of... how to attempt to repair the relationship that is fractured because of how we got rid of the character that we created that we knew had to die.
Because we had to get rid of it.
And now that sort of eats up two of the three episodes that we get every 2.5 years. I guess I don't mean to be niggardly about that, but it just seems wasteful of the time that is limited.
It is ways full of
time. I agree. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I have higher hopes for, you know, Toby Jones coming in as Culverton Smith. Yeah. I don't want
could,
that to
could be cool.
I
could be
don't great. Want that to be a waste of, I mean, that's a great, I mean, it is a heavily Holmes and Watson story in the canon, and I don't have any problem with that, mm-hmm. but I hope that we get, you know, the actual solving of this mystery. And yeah, with clues, with deduction, with Sherlock doing what it is that makes him Sherlock Holmes, because if he never does it, then, I mean, the I will say...
Just yeah. do your fucking job. Like, solve mysteries.
That's I really it. Hope they don't it's bring really him not... in to do one more sort of, and now I'm a disgusting psychopath, here's how we blow up the world. Like, now we've done that a couple times, and can we not have one more disgusting psychopath trying to blow up the world and create a personal vendetta against Sherlock Holmes? Let's not do that story again. Been there.
Yeah, I want to see something different. And I will say, I mean, hope. I think we're all probably in a place of hoping that episode two is more coherent, more cohesive, more like the Sherlock Holmes that we're interested in seeing.
Yeah.
Which I think Lindsay made a great point, which is regardless of how we feel about this episode, we obviously have 60 stories to go back to, plus a world of pastiche that we can all enjoy the versions of. But, you know, if they are going to bring in this thing and tease a supposed third Holmes brother or something, I want that to be... hopefully more of a tangent than just being about, like you guys have been saying, I want that to be a tangent to a story that's about a detective.
Yeah.
And I get that it's about a detective. It's not just about mysteries, but I need that detective to be
a detective
and showing me that. I don't want just a, you know, a 5-minute montage. Yes, I believe that he does what he says he does, but I read these stories because I want to see him doing it.
But it's actually really hard work to try to, like, come up with those clues.
Well, it's not like they had to do it in 30 minutes. They had some time to think of fucking clues.
Yeah, but like, I'm saying it's really fucking hard.
They can
do it. And I can say that.
They can do it. Mm-hmm. Because I have faith that they can do it.
I have faith they can do it, too. But, like, I have also faith that I can say, I can tell when you're not doing it.
Well, right? Which is funny because it's like, it's almost like, you know, post-hiatus Holmes in the canon has fewer and fewer of these deductive chains as well. So it's almost a weirdly, I don't know, I have to laugh a little bit about the similarity to some of the complaints about, like, post-hiatus Doyle kind of phoning it in and, like, you know, being like, all right, if you want to pay me a lot of money to do this. I'll write you more stories.
Let me rewrite the same story, but with slightly different people.
I mean...
Also, this time, it's with vampires. It's not with...
Yes.
Like, it's not with stockbrokers.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This time, it's with Garadebs instead of redheads.
Instead of redheads. You're like, we didn't oh even my god.
That. Oh my god, yes. We noticed. Conan Doyle, we noticed.
Basically, you guys can sum up what you want to say. In my case, there was a pretty clear distinction between not loving everything in the episode, but being incredibly moved by individual performances. And obviously, I think we haven't really talked about it, but the directing was really beautiful. There were very beautiful transitions.
Outstanding. Yeah.
I mean, it was Rachel, I don't know how you say it. Is it Talalay? Is that how you, I don't know how you say it, but...
Sure.
She's a very acclaimed female director, really excited to see a female director in a BBC One show, and she did an amazing job. Loved the visuals. It was almost like I would rather watch it as like an opera than worry about what's happening, because it was so beautiful, and much of it did not make sense, at least initially. So
much of it did not make sense.
Very beautiful.
Yeah. For my summary, I would just want to say that part of the reason that I'm so disappointed with this is because I have such high expectations of the show, and that's based on the show having done wonderful things. And there were moments of this show that were lovely, and the performances were great, and the directing was, and it was beautiful. And I continue to love Sherlock and all the people who are you know, associated with making it happen. So the criticisms are not to impugn them as people. I just felt that this episode went off track for me. It didn't fulfill the kinds of... It didn't address the particular pleasures that I get from Sherlock Holmes. So it's perfectly possible that it addresses the particular pleasures that some people get from Sherlock Holmes because they engage with it in a different way than I do, and that's perfectly fine. And if you loved it, then you loved it, and good for you. It just didn't happen to do the things that I want Sherlock Holmes to do. So that's why I felt like it was disappointing. But I'm hoping for better things in the upcoming two episodes.
I think at the end of the day, this episode, we can say whatever we want to say about it, and that's fine. But I always just go back to the canon, and when I need to read something that is about a perfect friendship or a lovely relationship, then I can always do that, reading the canon. This episode was fine, but it doesn't matter how it was because we still have the real books.
True that. I mean, and I know that's true of any adaptation.
Sorry.
I mean,
that was just me being a giant nerd.
I love it. No, I love it. It's like the t-shirts that say don't judge the book by its movie. It's like whether this was your favorite episode of Sherlock ever or your least favorite or somewhere in between, you know, I remember this is making me think of the Hounds of Baskerville, which actually was another thing where they had an acronym of people. I was like, I see what you did there, Mark. But anyway, it actually had some similarities to me. And I remember we had some disagreements in the Babes on people who liked that episode and people who didn't. But ultimately, we come back to the fact that obviously the Hound of the Baskervilles is an amazing story. And in this case, for me, The Sign of Four is an amazing story. And Mary Morstan Watson is an amazing character.
She's so wonderful.
And I hope that at the end of the day, you know, we can give, you know, credit to Amanda's amazing performance throughout the series as this character and then go back to the canon and see this amazing woman that at the end of the day, Sherlock Holmes said would have made a fantastic detective. That doesn't mean she needs to be female James Bond, and she's an amazing character wherever she appears. So kudos to that. And kudos to the canon. That's where we're ending up.
Yeah.
Is go back and read the canon, folks. Whether you love the episode or didn't.
And just a reminder that this whole show is about how many times one man can get kicked in the nuts.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1